Ezra, Dave, and Drew return on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, the man on my far left, Dave Minuk, the man in the middle, Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program from the Dallas Morning News, our good friend, Mike Hyka. Mike, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Gentlemen, how are you doing?
Very well, Mike. How about yourself?
Doing great.
That's good.
If you're not having any playoffs to cover, I'm okay.
Okay, well, you got a coaching change to cover this week. Lindy Ruff, his contract not renewed. Ken Hitchcock rehired as the Stars head coach. We'll first start with the decision on Ruff to not have his contract renewed. Did that come as a surprise at all to you, or just sort of the time run its course with Lindy Ruff in Dallas and the disappointing results of this year sort of dictated that he wasn't going to be back as head coach?
Yeah, I think we knew this a couple months ago. Yeah, that's the cycle. He had 4 years, made it twice, didn't make it twice. I think the interesting thing about last year and this year is, yes, they had injuries, but he coaches a brand of high-risk hockey, and when it pays off and you're healthy, like they were healthy last year, they got off to a 9-2-0 start, the ceiling's limited, so you can do anything, and they won the Western Conference. But when it doesn't pay off and you have adversity, it's really hard to just, you know, sit back and play 2-1 games and fight through until your bodies get healthy. And it's just, it's a very risky brand of running your organization. And I think there's too many factors in the NHL that could put your season in dire jeopardy. Like, I mean, we've seen other teams, and L.A. is not a good example this year, but L.A. has had situations where they've had bad years, and they just, you know, they get in as the AC, and Dallas couldn't do that this year.
Mike, in his time as head coach of the Dallas Stars, what would you say Lindy Ruff's biggest weakness was?
That's a great question. I think you could say his, inability to coach defense into the young players. Part of that was on Jim Nill, because of the two goalie system and because he gave Lindy 8 defensemen, 4 of which were under 24. But he didn't make those players better. And him and James Patrick, I think they get the most heat for that. He was so involved. He's so involved in winning and go, 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 that he couldn't take the time to turn Steven Johns or Jamie Oleksiak or Patrick Nemeth into the kind of defenseman who could really help him and help him for a while. I mean, like, those guys right now should be forming a really good group of defensemen. And I don't even know if any of them will be back. So Lindy Ruff had 4 years with those guys and didn't really turn them into the defenseman that they needed to be.
Mike, Jamie Benn and Ken Hitchcock had a sit-down meeting on Wednesday. How do you think that went? Because obviously you wrote about it in the Dallas Morning News about how they had to form that relationship. Do you think that it was a good initial start to their getting to know each other?
Yeah, definitely. And it's interesting. Jamie, I like him a ton, obviously, as a player, and then I like him as a person as well. I think he really is dedicated to making this win. He cares a lot about it. And I wrote in the middle of the season about quicksand, where, you know, you get into that place where you're trying so hard and you only, you know, dig yourself a deeper hole. He's a victim of that. So him and Hitch getting on the right page, I think, is a good thing. The great thing about Ken Hitchcock, or at least the thing I saw when he was here 20 years ago, 17 years ago, is he very much cares about the individual and, for a selfish reason, wants to know what buttons to push. So he will get to know you. He'll get to know your family. He'll get to know what you like, what you don't like, how you feel about certain players. And then he'll use those buttons to push them to make you a better player. And I think he's already pushing them on Jamie and trying to say, look, I know you don't want to yell at your teammate, or I know you don't want to stand up in the middle of the room and demand perfection from these guys, but that's your job. And nobody's really done that to Jamie yet. Nobody's, you know, told him this is his job and he has to do it. They've just kind of said, oh, he just leads by example. But Hitch is going to demand that Jamie be vocal. He's going to demand that he demands perfection from his teammates, because Hitch also knows that players will tune out coaches. Players probably aren't going to tune out their captain. And so that's how it's a selfish way of using Jamie, but it's also a way of, I think, getting Jamie to be the best person he can be.
Mike Hajka, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, talking about the Dallas Stars, their coaching changes this week. Ken Hitchcock back as head coach. Lindy Ruff out as head coach. Mike, it seems like Ken Hitchcock was Jim Nill's target all along. Was there any consideration given to somebody other than Ken Hitchcock in this role?
I think Gerard Gallant definitely, you know, probably talked to Ken or talked to Jim. The two were teammates back in Detroit back in the day. Clearly, Gallant was talking to Las Vegas as well. I don't think it's any surprise that as soon as Ken was named, that Gallant was then named the Las Vegas coach. So nobody's told me that for sure, but just the way the timing lines up is that, you know, I think Gerard Gallant may have been a candidate to come in here. Jim said he talked to three different people. My guess would have been Ken, Gerard, and maybe Michelle Therrien.
You know, Mike, was this job appealing to Ken Hitchcock, not only because of the familiarity with coaching the Dallas Stars, but because this team is not that far away from getting back into the playoffs and being a Stanley Cup contender?
Yeah, he said as much. And the interesting thing about Ken is he's being pretty honest about his age and everything. He knows his window is not too long. So he's not here for a five-year rebuild. He's here to try and win next year and the year after that. He needed a team that he thought he could turn around pretty quickly. And when you look at Sagan and Ben and Spezza and John Klingberg and, you know, some of the other pieces they have in place, you can turn it around. So that was important. And then the other thing is, I really do think he loves it here. I think it is very important for him to turn this organization back around and get people caring about hockey in Dallas, Texas again. It's been a while. They've missed the playoffs 7 of the last 9 years. He has friends who live here. He visits down here, and I think he's saddened by the fact that there's just no buzz. I mean, it's not in the newspaper, it's not on television, it's not on the radio. You know, it's all Cowboys or Rangers or for the last 10 years, Mavericks. I think they're starting to wane. But there just hasn't been a hockey buzz in this town, and Ken Hitchcock would love to get that back.
Mike, we know that Jim Nill is not afraid to make trades. Is it safe to say that he's going to be one of the more active GMs, not only because he has to go out and acquire a goaltender and decide what he's going to do with Kari Lehtinen and Antti Niemi, but he also has some other free agent forwards that are pending UFAs, and he really needs to supplement Jason Spezza and Tyler Seguin and others with some added offense?
He's got some weird – it's an odd situation. He's got two players – who could actually be really important, and he has no idea if they're going to be back. One's Matthias Janmark, who went through this knee surgery where he's got to get blood flowing into the bone in his knee, and so it's an odd operation, and they're really probably not going to be sure until about August. But Matthias Janmark last year was Jason Spezza's, you know, key winger and would be a huge part of coming back. And then Val Nichushkin's in the KHL. And, yes, he's under contract for next year, but, you know you can get out of those types of things. So now, you know, he has to deal with, are both Janmark and Nichushkin coming back? If they are coming back, then maybe he doesn't need a whole lot of free agency. But if both aren't going to be here, you know, then does he have to throw his hat into the ring on some of these guys, whether that's TJ Oshie or you know, some of these other UFAs who could really help up top with a guy like Spezza and complement his play. So that issue is interesting. The goaltending's obviously interesting. I personally think they should buy out both of them and then go after a guy like Jonas Korpisalo before the expansion draft. And then, you know, once you get Korpisalo, then you can add Bishop or Darling or make a trade of some sort. So all that's very complicated for Jim. And then the other question is, do you need one more defenseman? I think everybody on the outside says yes, but that's a really hard thing to get because they don't need a fourth or fifth defenseman. They need a first or second defenseman. So how do you go and get one of those guys? I don't think the free agent market, Carl Alsner will be available. I don't know that Shattenkirk would want to come here, but who knows? I think free agency will be tough for a defenseman. So then, yeah, Jim Nill would have to look at the trade market.
One former Dallas Star great who's been pretty vocal on Twitter is Mike Modano. Has there been any consideration of bringing him back into the fold in some capacity, considering all the former players that are seem to be returning to their teams in some way, shape, or form?
I would love to see them do it because he's one, he's funny, which is very helpful in you know, selling the sport down here. And two, he really does care. I you know, him and Hitch get along. They go throw darts at each other, and it's fun to listen and watch. He can't coach. I just don't think he could put up with the hours for it. But he could be like the ambassador of fun, like Brett Hull was a few years back. The problem is that, you know, Mike pretty much lives in Phoenix with his wife and kids. And then it becomes a question of, okay, if you're going to have that guy in your organization the way that Marty Turco is, does he need to be around on a fairly regular basis? And so then, you know, can you negotiate that out with Mike where you're flying him in, you know, once every 2 weeks, once a month? I think, you know, I don't think it can be any less than once a month. And then, you know, have him be a part of the ticket selling, part of the organization. I don't see him in hockey ops or anything like that because it would just take too much time. But boy, it would be sure fun to have him around, you know, every other week just to take jabs at Hitch or be on TV or, you know, wave at the fans or, you know, go do a autograph signing. I do think that would be a great thing for the organization.
Mike, we'll let you go on this last question. Any pressure now on Jim Nill? I mean, Lindy Ruff was his hire. That obviously ran its course. Ken Hitchcock, that's his hire. He made the decision to go with the goaltending tandem of Lehtonen and Niemi, and we know how big of a disaster that's been. Any pressure on Jim Nill's shoulders now?
Yeah, I think it's all. I shouldn't say all. I mean, they're all in it together. He has a contract through 2023, and I think that, you know, obviously helped him a great deal. But, yeah, I mean, he was hoping to build a culture, and I don't think they built it. He really didn't give them an identity yet, and we're entering the fifth year of the organization. And, you know, when you look at what the Dallas Stars under Bob Gainey were, they had an identity. When you look at the Red Wings under Ken Holland, they had an identity. You know, the Kings, the Blackhawks, the Bruins, they all have an identity. And the Dallas Stars are entering, you know, year five of Jim Nill's program, and I have no idea what their identity is. So it is on him now, and it is going to be high pressure. I think the interesting thing will be, and this is, you know, in the weeks coming up, is are they going to hire Ken Hitchcock's successor right now? And, you know, if he is only in this for, you know, 1, 2, 3 years, can they get an associate coach who Jim Nill feels comfortable with taking them, you know, into the next 7 or 8 years? So that will be a big thing to watch in the coming weeks and months.
Mike Hajka covers the Dallas Stars for the Dallas Morning News. He's a good friend of this program. Mike, always appreciate your time and your insight. Thanks for joining us this morning.
No problem. It's always fun to be on.
Likewise, Mike. Take care. When we come back, we shift our focus to the Eastern Conference. We'll talk about those playoff races. Pardon me, playoff series. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show returns. Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Alex Radulov wins it for the Montreal Canadiens in overtime, tying the series up at one game apiece between the Rangers and the Habs. Rapturous joy indeed at the Bell Center last night. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com or check out their new showroom, 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Tell them Illegal Curve sent you. Keener Jerseys, where craftsmanship makes all the difference. A great, great overtime last night between the Habs and the Rangers. The Rangers on their heels for the entirety of that overtime. Henrik Lundqvist standing tall, and then just when it looked like we might get our first double overtime of the playoffs, the Habs are able to pull it off late in overtime. Alex Radulov, the hero last night for Montreal.
Yeah, I was actually watching that game with Naomi, and right before the winning goal was scored by Alex Radulov, she said to me, "This game's for sure going to double overtime." And I actually said to her, "I don't know about this. There have been a lot of good scoring chances in the first overtime." So definitely, though, Drew, that game kind of almost deserved to go to double overtime. I mean, that game was a classic. I was tweeting it out yesterday. Unbelievable chances both ways. Both Carey Price and Henrik Lundqvist were very good. And, you know, you talk about the Montreal Canadiens. Who gets the tying goal? A guy who had a terrible regular season, Thomas Plekanec. I think he had 28 points. So he's a guy that really needed to step up. And Alex Radulov wasn't very good in game one, and he ends up getting the OT winner. And he's a guy who's playing for a contract, right? Because he only signed the one-year contract after coming over from Russia. So I think it was really fitting that those two players got the tying goal and the winning goal. And a guy like Alex Galchenyuk, I thought, was much better. He was a guy, Dave, that, you know, we thought, where was he going to start? Was he going to start in the third line, the fourth line, the second line? We had no idea. He's really been all over the place. So an absolute classic game. You had lead changes, and you had so much physicality. And for two teams, Drew, that aren't really known as physical teams, you know, sure, the Montreal Canadiens have added Weber, guys like Andrew Shaw and Dwight King, and Steve Ott was mixing it up yesterday. But certainly the Rangers are not known as a very physical team. They have guys that can mix it up. Tanner Glass had a huge hit on Shea Weber there. So I just thought it was one of those classic first-round games. And, you know, huge for the Montreal Canadiens, because if they go back down 2-0, I think the series is over.
It's got everything you would want in a series. You got speed on both ends. I mean, speed to kill on both ends. You have tremendous goaltending. You know, two of the classic goaltenders, the best goaltenders. Lundqvist sort of towards the end or the downside of his career, let's say. Carey Price still one of the best goaltenders in the league. This series has been, I think, the most entertaining of the eight first round series so far.
Yeah, that. But you know, it all comes down to that Plekanec goal, because you're right, Ezzy. If that he doesn't score that goal and they go down 2-0 to New York, I mean, that's a pretty insurmountable, not impossible, but it's a tough hill to climb to try and overcome that against a very good New York Rangers team. It was a great series, and honestly, like Radulov, like Ez said, had a great game, goal and two assists, played, you know, physical, played invested in the game, and you could see it on his face. I thought the roof was going to blow off the building when Plekanec tied that game, because you could just see how nervous fans were in Montreal. You have a 2-1 lead that quickly elapses into a 3-2 New York lead. So like Ez was talking about, lead changes were key. That Vesey pass up to Rick Nash, and that goal by Rick Nash, I mean, he had almost nowhere to put it and put it just in the right spot upstairs on Carey Price. That was a beauty. So you really thought that New York was going to build on that momentum, and Carey Price stood tall and made sure he kept his team in it. And then they did exactly what they needed to do, was get it to overtime where any team can win it. And overtime was phenomenal. I mean, there really is nothing better than overtime hockey.
The Rangers just looked
in the playoffs.
I thought in the overtime period, and they did have some chances, but the Habs certainly controlled the bulk of that overtime. The Rangers just looked to me, they looked just a little demoralized once the Habs were able to get that tying goal with, you know, 17 seconds to go or whatever the exact time was. I just thought the Rangers looked like, okay, we won game one. We'd like to win game two, but it's not desperate that we win game two. And that's sort of how I thought the overtime played out. Like, the Habs were the more desperate of the two teams, and they played overtime with that desperate edge in their game.
Yeah, I agree with that, and they had to, right, Drew? And the Rangers had some chances in that first overtime period, the only overtime period, but Shea Weber rang that off the crossbar. It looked like Henrik Lundqvist got a little piece of it there, but I would say that the Montreal Canadiens had the better scoring chances, absolutely, in the overtime period. And, you know, you talk about Rick Nash, Dave, and, you know, really going into the series, when you're talking about the New York Rangers, you're talking about that top line of Kreider, Stepan, and Zuccarello. But Rick Nash was very effective. I thought he was really good in the first game, too. And, you know, Montreal Canadiens right now are without Alexei Emelin, right? So Nikita Nesterov has replaced him in the lineup, and that's been the third pair for them, Jordy Benn and Nesterov. And I actually thought that they've done a pretty good job here in the first couple of games. And I thought the pairing of Nathan Beaulieu and Jeff Petrie was very good for the Montreal Canadiens. And Markov and Weber is obviously your top pair, so you know what you're going to expect out of those guys. Those guys were jumping up into the rush, and I thought they were much more effective in game two. So I agree with both of you guys. I mean, this has been the best series for me, and we knew it was going to be close. I don't think many people were calling for a sweep or a five-game series here, right? We were expecting there to be some overtime games and all of that. So pretty entertaining. I think the 20,000 plus fans at Bell Center got their money's worth last night. And, you know, Dave mentioned it. It was pretty loud there after they tied it up, and even louder when they scored it in overtime. So lots of pretty goals. And the goaltending's been good. And when you consider that there were seven goals last night, you know, sometimes that's tough to say. But, you know, both of these teams can score. And even though the Montreal Canadiens maybe, you know, they lack like a game breaker sometimes. But, you know, Alex Radulov is that guy for the Montreal Canadiens, Drew. I mean, this is why they brought him back. I mean, you go back a couple of years, who did the Habs acquire thinking that could be the guy? Alex Semin, right? And that didn't work out. And you go back even further, and Thomas Vanek was that guy, and that's why they were calling him Vanquish in Montreal, right? So, I mean, give Alex Radulov credit. He was pretty solid all throughout the regular season, and he stepped up in game two.
You mentioned Nesterov. He only played 13 minutes on the Habs back end after getting benched earlier in the game.
If you watch that game, the Habs really moved to four defensemen in the overtime. It was Markov and Weber, and then they had Bolia and Petrie, and Jordy Benn and Nesterov weren't playing much in the overtime, and we've seen that year after year. I mean, the Blackhawks, you know, over the last 4 or 5 years, when it gets to overtime, you know they're going to roll out Keith Oduya, Seabrook, and Jalmerson, right? So that's not uncommon. But again, Nikita Nesterov.
Jordy Benn still played 23 minutes. I mean, he was the second lowest.
Well, he got the shorthanded time, right?
I know, but I'm saying it seems like, and we saw it on the broadcast yesterday, it seemed like Claude Julien doesn't have a ton of confidence in Nesterov. So you wonder if maybe Brandon Davidson will get into the lineup for game three.
And again, those are savvy moves by Mark Bergevin, picking those guys up at the trade deadline. I mean, Brandon Davidson and Nikita Nesterov, I mean, that's not, you know, Paul Coffey and Ray Bourque there, but in a situation like this, Alexei Emelin might not be back this series, right? We're not sure when he's going to be back. And Emelin's a guy that can play 20 to 22 minutes a game. He's physical and all that. And this series has got physical, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, give Jordy Benn a lot of credit. He's the wily veteran, and, you know, Claude Julien has trusted him, putting him out there even in overtime.
It will be a very interesting game three and going forward. Of course, game three shifts to Madison Square Garden. That goes tomorrow. Continuing our look at the Eastern Conference, we covered the Blue Jackets and Penguins enough already today, so we'll look at the two other series that have each only played one game. Washington leads the Toronto Maple Leafs 1-0. Game two goes tonight, a game, of course, you can hear live on TSN 1290. Coverage at 6 o'clock for that game, so be sure to have your radio tuned to that to hear the Leafs and the Capitals. And the Bruins and the Senators, that's an afternoon game. The Bruins lead that series 1-0. It's sort of funny, the Bruins don't get a shot on goal in the second period of game one. Lo and behold, it doesn't matter because they score two goals in the third period and are able to defeat the Senators and take a 1-0 series lead in that series.
Yeah, and we expected it to be lower scoring, and we expected it to be close, right? There's not much, I think, that separates these two teams, and, you know, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens here. Another situation, I mean, if you go down two games, it's very hard to come back in a series. So didn't watch that game a lot, but certainly that's a series that I think can go either way, and, you know, it might not be getting as much hype as the Rangers or Habs series. You know, both of those teams, many people didn't think either of those teams were going to be playoff teams this year, but you know, both of them have gone through some adversities with what's going on with Craig Anderson and Bobby Ryan. I mean, that is a huge goal for Bobby Ryan that he scores for the Senators. They end up losing, but, you know, a guy like Brad Marchand has a breakout year this year. Would have got 40 goals if he wasn't suspended, most likely. But for me, that series is a complete coin flip.
And from the Leafs' perspective, they were certainly the upstart young team in that game against the Capitals for the most part, jumping out to the early 2-0 lead. The Capitals, though, are able to sort of withstand the storm. They didn't play their best hockey by any stretch of the imagination. And then Tom Wilson sort of seemed like a relatively innocent shot on goal, eludes Frederick Anderson in overtime, and the Capitals dodge a bullet and take a 1-0 series lead over the Leafs.
I think Justin Williams said it best to Scott Oak in the intermission when he
was a little pissed off with Scott's question,
because he didn't appreciate the tenor of the question, talking about, you know, the Capitals and the way they were, you know, whether they were pushing or whether, and he's like, you know, calm down, like, it's only game one and we're, you know, there's a lot of hockey left to play. You still have to respect your opponent, but I think that was Toronto's best opportunity to really kind of cause a little havoc and maybe cause a little concern for those Washington Capitals. But like I said, Justin Williams is just such a professional. Seems to always get it done in the playoffs every year after year. Two goals for him, and then obviously, you know, they get the overtime winner from
Tom Wilson.
Yeah, Tom Wilson. Yeah. The unlikely overtime
winner.
Exactly.
Yeah, I know.
So, you know, I thought that was their best chance at cost Washington a little off guard, but I don't think you're going to catch Washington off guard for the rest of the series.
When we come back, we start our Winnipeg Jets end of season roundtable. Scott Billick of NHL.com joins us in studio. Jeff Hamilton, I believe, is on his way as well to join us. 1 hour looking at the Winnipeg Jets and the end of their season. It's coming up next. Hour number three is up next on TSN 1290.
You're on the Curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Well, it's always disappointing to end a season, and you know, you always have high hopes coming in, and these things seem to fly by. So it's never a good feeling, you know, when you're packing up your stuff today, think about just another missed opportunity. But you know, I think we ended on a high note, so I think the guys are feeling positive about the direction we're headed.
Winnipeg Jets captain Blake Wheeler, that's from last Sunday's end-of-season media availability. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Hour number three, our Winnipeg Jets end-of-season roundtable starts now on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, regular associates Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg, joining us in studio as well from NHL.com, Scott Billick, and from the Winnipeg Free Press, Jeff Hamilton. Pleasure, gentlemen, that you're all able to join us on this Saturday morning. Thanks for doing this. Should mention, of course, that this segment is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia. We start, of course, with the season that was for the Winnipeg Jets. And let me start with you, Jeff.
I should say here, by the way, I'm against my will, you know, so if anyone has protection, get me out of here.
You're here against your will?
I'm kidding. I feel like I'm in a prison.
You're feeling, you know, a lot of people say that listening to us makes you feel like you're in a prison.
Just the number of guys. Have you painted the picture in your 3 hours?
I haven't. Like, There are seven men in the studio right now. We have the five of us as part of the round table.
All great men, of course.
All great men. Producer Rory is here, and of course, Jacob is here observing the show. Radio broadcaster or journalist extraordinaire. So it is a little tight quarters here at TSN 1290.
Andrew, you could have got Jeff a better chair here. He tore his ACL, and you give him the worst chair.
I didn't know. You tore your ACL?
Yeah.
How'd you do that?
Chasing down a Bomber story, and they sent over a couple tough customers, and here we are. No, soccer Sunday. For those who have ever had this injury before, it sucks. But.
Well, Ezzy's torn his ACL before, and he did no rehab whatsoever with it, so we recommend that you do rehab, otherwise you'll limp permanently like Ezzy does.
Yeah, no, that's the plan. Anyway, sorry to interrupt.
That's
a big
okay.
Jam in this hour-long round.
Let's get to the round table. And the first question I had, and you heard from Blake Wheeler, and he talked about the sort of the disappointment that was the season. And obviously, when you miss the playoffs, it's disappointing. And the expectations, though, at the beginning of the season for a lot of people were that this wasn't necessarily going to be a playoff team. So let me ask you this, Jeff. You know, the pros of the season, the positives that came at the end of the year, the emergence of Mark Scheifele as what I would describe as a bona fide number one center, the emergence of Patrick Laine, Nikolaj Ehlers, Josh Morrissey affirming himself as a bona fide top four NHL defenseman. Do they outweigh the cons of the season, the missing the playoffs again, the continued issues with defense and special teams and goaltending? Taking a macro view, taking sort of the disappointment that's inherent with missing the playoffs out of the picture, do the pros outweigh the cons this season?
I don't know. I mean, that's a good question, but it's a tough question. I mean, does it outweigh the pros of developing these young guys and establishing really where they're at in this development, and on top of that, what you need as a team to get to that next step? Does that outweigh actually not getting to that next step? I mean, in some ways, you know, sure, absolutely. At the end of the day, though, I mean, when you can identify what this team needs, you realize just how close they were to getting to that spot. I mean, I think heading into this season, You know, a lot of people put them in ninth place. Well, I mean, a seven-game win streak put them in ninth place at the end of the season. So I was actually talking with a friend yesterday wondering how many teams put together that long of a win streak and didn't make the postseason. And it's them and the Philadelphia Flyers, I believe, put together 10 wins earlier in the year. And obviously the Flyers are not in the playoffs either. But I don't know if it necessarily outweighs it. I think there's a ton of disappointment in the city just from not having the playoff hockey. And as we've watched the last couple of days, I mean, how exciting is it to have, you know, to be able to watch on TV, just to have that buzz in the city when we had that a couple of years ago. I mean, I don't think anyone really remembers that feeling, how quickly it went by. So certainly disappointing, but there are benefits. I think the main benefit, if it just to answer the question, that outweighs it is identifying not just what you have but what you need. And I think that will be the big challenge for Jets brass over this offseason, to identify those, because I think expectations going into next year, not just with the players or with the fans or with management, is all on the same level. I mean, I think it's playoffs. I wouldn't say it's playoffs or bust, but this team better be in it for the entire season and going down to the wire.
Scott Bilk of NHL.com, sort of your, you know, perspective on the season that was for the Jets. Disappointment for missing, clearly, but do the pros outweigh the cons?
Yeah, I'm going to go with yes on this one, and simply because this team pretty much hit the reset button before the season started, right? They go all young. They go with two goalies, neither proven. And I think at the end of the day, I mean, you watch the evolution of, you know, four or five different rookies, Josh Morrissey, well, not just rookies, but, you know, second-year guys, Josh Morrissey or Nick Ehlers. Mark Scheifele took the next step for himself. You know, obviously, like Jeff said, you know, they also saw where the issues are, goaltending, you know, some depth guys on defense. But, you know, this year it's almost like a new core took over in that dressing room. You know, the drivers on this team now are Mark Scheifele, Jacob Trouba, you know, some of the younger guys. You know, Patrick Laine is going to move into that spot as well. So we talk about some of the trying to get some positives out of this season after missing the playoffs again. And, you know, was it the fifth time in 6 years? But when a team hits, you know, I don't know if you want to call this a rebuild or whatever it was, but the team reset itself this year. And I think, you know, there was positives. I don't think anybody was expecting this team to make the playoffs. And yeah, they got close in the end, but, you know, close is part of that
close
seven
after
game
they
streak.
Were already
exactly
eliminated.
So how much stock do you put into that? Mm-hmm. But no, I think, you know, in the end, when you look at the season as a whole, yeah, I think the positives did outweigh, you know, the negatives here.
And Scott, you can almost say that the Jets, you know, hit the reset button going back to the Andrew Ladd trade, right?
Sure.
And picked up Marco Dano and a first round pick. But I think Scott makes a lot of good points there, because if the Jets had missed the playoffs and Mark Scheifele had taken a step back, or Nikolaj Ehlers had taken a step back, or Josh Morrissey had struggled, we'd be talking about those players having down years as reasons why the Jets missed the playoffs. But we've talked about it a lot on this station, and it's been written about by Scott and written about by Jeff. I mean, the biggest problem with this Jets team has been the goaltending and their play in the defensive zone. And, you know, the seven-game winning streak at the end of the season, I think, you know, kind of, you know, flatters the Jets a little bit, in the sense that they pick up those points at the end of the year that don't mean a lot, and they inch a little bit closer to the playoffs. But really, you know, this team was quite a distance away from making the playoffs, right? When you consider that they haven't taken that next step when it comes to special teams. They're still an undisciplined team. They take too many penalties. I mean, I thought that the Jets could make the playoffs. I was the only one out of the three of us that predicted that the Jets would make the playoffs. I thought the goaltending would be better. You know, at times, Michael Hutchinson struggled and Connor Hellebuck struggled, and that's why Andre Pavlik had to be recalled from the Manitoba Moose in January, right? So I think that, you know, you can take those positives out of the Jets season, and that, sure, Mark Scheifele finishes top 10 in the league in scoring. I don't know what it was, seventh or eighth. Whatever. Nikolaj Ehlers, you know, advances and takes another step, puts up more points. And Josh Morrissey, I don't think anybody was expecting Josh Morrissey to be this good. I thought he would be a good defenseman, but again, I've said it before, I think he's now the number one left side defenseman on this team. So, you know, his emergence was certainly a great surprise, but again, they didn't make the playoffs, right? So, I mean, you can take all of these positives out of individual performances, but at the end of the day, they didn't get into the playoffs. And whether or not you thought they were going to get into the playoffs or not, and most people, I think, would say didn't expect this team to get into the playoffs. And again, I say that the Jets were far off. They really weren't that far off. I think if you get better goaltending and you score a power play goal here or there, you take a few games to you overtime the shootout. The Jets didn't get a lot of points from shootout losses and overtime losses, right? Mm-hmm. When you compare it to a team like the Toronto Maple Leafs, for example. So I think they weren't as far off as you would think. But as far as their goaltending and defense goes, I think they are quite a ways away from where they want to be.
Dave, at the beginning of the season, the question may have been more so one of what do the Jets have? And I think that's pretty much been answered in that they have a solid nucleus of talented players. And the question now shifts towards what do the Jets need to do to fill the few gaps that still exist. Does the fact that the question has changed, that you're now more solid with what you have, does that sort of change your perception on how the season went as a whole?
Yeah, I think so. I think that you can take that as a positive and you can say, okay, we've had these guys develop into that position that we need them to be, and we have the Scheiflies and the Ehlers emerge and be able to be superstars in this league now. And so you're saying to yourself, okay, can you just tweak this lineup just a little bit? Can you add one or two pieces, which you need to do? Like, the Jets still need that left side defenseman. They still need to shore up the goaltending. There's no question about that. I mean, the fact is, we saw what happened to this team with the injury to Brian Little in game one. I mean, you can't shake off the fact that without Brian Little in this lineup, what a major impact it had. Without Tyler Myers in this lineup, what kind of impact that had. So depth is still a question for this team. Now, we're seeing young players emerge from the Moose, Kyle Connor, Jack Roslovic. They'll be in the mix next year potentially. Me personally, I still think a player like Jack Roslovic, center, it's a deeper position. It's a harder position to really learn. Especially as a younger player, he'll probably be with the Moose still next year. Kyle Connor, he's really emerged in the AHL. He's, you know, he had his 25th goal last night for the Moose, which was the game winner. Can he transition that to the NHL? What we saw in the one game back, he scored that tying goal against Nashville. He's a player that they're going to rely on heavily potentially next year if he can make that jump. So there's definitely some important things that have transpired. But the reality is, it's all somewhat moot if you don't deal with the things that need dealing with. So if the GM doesn't go out and get a veteran goalie to push Connor Hellebuck, well, then you can't go into the 2017-18 season with its goaltending tandem again. So that's a fact. Then you also need defensive depth, because look what happened. I mean, you can say how many people anticipated Nelson Noje being a call-up for the Winnipeg Jets. Nelson Noje didn't anticipate being a call-up in his first pro season for the Winnipeg Jets and playing as many games as he did. So the fact is that, you know, you kind of want to You can't always anticipate the injuries that you're going to suffer, but you still have to gird against them. And so that's one of the things that Kevin Cheveldayoff is going to have to address in the offseason.
When we come back, we'll talk about Kevin Cheveldayoff and Paul Maurice. Are they the right tandem to shape this organization and lead it to future success? It's our Winnipeg Jets end of season roundtable. We're live on TSN 1290.
Ezra, Dave, and Drew return on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Years ago, I think we were at about 500 or so games played by players under 25. Last year, it would have gone to about 780, and this year, we're over 900. I think that number levels off for our team soon. I don't see 4 rookies making our team again this year at the start of the year. So we'll be better. We'll be better in all areas. It'll be incremental. We have areas that we have to improve that aren't going to come easily. Doesn't need to be turned around. It's already headed in the right direction. We'll get better.
Winnipeg Jets head coach Paul Maurice is part of his end of season media availability. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Easy for me to say. It's our end of season roundtable on TSN 1290. We're joined, of course, by Jeff Hamilton of the Winnipeg Free Press, Scott Billick of NHL.com. Gentlemen, I led off with Jeff before. I'll lead off with Scott this time. Scott, from your perspective, you know, it's now been Kevin Cheveldayoff's been the only general manager that this organization knows. Paul Maurice has been the head coach here now for a number of seasons, both entering into the final years of their contract, their final year of their respective contracts. Are they the right tandem to lead this team to success? And by which I mean, you know, extensive playoff success, you know, perennial playoff success. Are they the right tandem in which the Winnipeg Jets, to shape the Winnipeg Jets organization?
You know, it's a very tough question. This year, I think you kind of saw, you know, the fruits of that whole draft and development thing starting to come up with some of these guys. You know, you've drafted Mark Scheifele, he's turned into an 80-point guy. You drafted Jacob Trouba, he's turned into, you know, a top guy, a top-pairing guy. Josh Morrissey, the same thing. To fire both of them right now would be a little odd. I mean, you know, they are on their last year of contract. I think next year is a kind of a do or die for both of them. But I think they've done – I think Cheveldayoff has done enough in terms of drafting to warrant kind of seeing it through for at least the next year. Paul Maurice seems like the guy who – and it's interesting, you know, he seems like he has – control of the room. It seems like, you know, he's been good. A lot of the young guys said it. Mark Scheifele might have been one of those guys who kind of dodged that question a little bit, but a lot of the young guys said that, you know, he's been good for them. I just think right now in this situation, at least for the next season, and see how next season goes with kind of what Maurice said at the end of the year, if they're going to get incrementally better, where are they going to be? I think they just need, I think to give them one more year is right, and I think after next year, or at least, you know, midway through the year, see how the team's doing, and at that point, kind of make a decision. I don't even think I answered the question there.
It's okay, you talked around it very well, though.
It's a tough one, you know, because, you know, if you fire them now, then, you know, you spend another year or whatever trying to figure out what's going on with this team, with whoever they bring in.
Let me ask you, Jeff, and Scott, you can answer this one as well. What about the concept of lame duck head coach or a lame duck general manager? Do you put any weight into that? Do you think it's a distraction if the head coach does play out his contract? Do you think there's any validity in the idea that a head coach must have security of the current season plus one more? Because it does seem like they haven't done it yet, but it does seem like, you know, the Jets are planning on providing a contract extension to both Cheveldayoff and Maurice at some point during this offseason.
Yeah, I mean, the whole lame duck idea, I'll address that. I just don't think, I mean, given what this team's done over the years and where they're heading, to give, you know, Paul Maurice this only this year and have it talked about all season long about when he's going to sign a contract extension, if he's going to sign a contract extension, I think, you know, I mean, that question, do we think these are the right guys? I just don't think it really matters, because I think both are going to sign extensions before next season. This is good. They're going to see it through, as Scott mentioned, and I truly believe it's kind of, this is the first year they've really seen the fruits of their of that draft and develop process. They brought guys in. They've created, look, I know fans are really frustrated with this tandem, and rightfully so, but I think what they've been able to do, or what they've been asked to do, rather, is a quite a large feat. I mean, we're talking about Lindy Ruff before. He couldn't adapt to the younger players. He couldn't get the most out of them. I think Paul Maurice has got the most out of Nikolaj Ehlers, Mark Scheifele, you know, Jacob Trouba, all these young guys coming up. I mean, that's been his job, and Kevin Cheveldayoff's job is to find these guys. And what they've been asked to do is not just create a winner, at least what their plan is, not to just create a winner that's going to get in, but to have a new culture. I mean, they adopted, and we can go back to the Atlanta days and talk about how, you know, miserable that team was, and how their prospects pretty much had none in the cupboards. But the reality is that this management came in to re-identify itself with this city, this team. You already seen guys like Andrew Ladd leave. You know, you're going to see more guys leave in this offseason, and you're going to probably see more guys leave in the future as these young guys become the new core. So to hand that over to new personnel, and to try to find and get on the same page that they've been on for I know it's been a stressful, you know, 6 years here, but it just doesn't make any sense to do that to guys who would have to walk in. The only thing I would say to that is, in a couple years, or particularly next year, if you don't see that continued step in progress, you might have a guy like Paul Maurice be on the hot seat. I don't think Kevin Cheveldayoff will necessarily fall into that group just yet, but that's only because I don't think Paul Maurice will fetch a huge contract. I mean, I think he'll get a raise just given the coach's salaries these days. But if they get to a point where they feel like coaching's the difference, I think Cheveldayoff will get one more coach perhaps in this mix.
How much impact or how much blame do you put on the shoulders of Paul Maurice for the inability to turn these special teams around? Either of you want to handle that first? I mean, that's a big question.
I mean, I put complete fault on it. I mean, that's the coach. That's I mean, let's face it. When you look at professional sports and what the head coaching, what head coaches do, hockey, I would say, is the least impactful to a team. It's so quick. It's so, you know, you got to adjust. I mean, obviously systems are important, of course, but I'm just comparing this to football. Stuff you can kind of do in between baseball. All these different things that a manager can do
in-game. Half-time adjustments.
Exactly.
Sort of
yeah, exactly. And you know, you have other kind of, I mean, not that Palmer doesn't have his staff to help him out, but I do think that if you are looking at some of the measurables on this coaching staff, special teams has to be one of them. I mean, you know, Pascal Vincent was in charge of that last season, and now he's coaching the Manitoba Moose. People see that as a promotion. I don't see that as a promotion. I see that as a, okay, keep teaching them what we've taught you in the Jets system to the younger guys. And I'm not going to say this is the last straw. I'm not going to put words in anyone's mouth. I haven't heard that, or that would be just speculation. But the reality is they brought a new guy in to address that. And it just hasn't gotten better. And a lot of fans will be frustrated because of the personnel the Jets have. Why aren't they producing? But the power play kind of figured itself out a little bit by the end of the season. The penalty kill is just atrocious. So unless you have a good penalty kill, you know, you're not going to be a team that's going to go deeper anywhere if you can't stop opposing power plays.
Scott, your thoughts on the special teams and the impact that coaching has on special teams?
Well, sure. And I looked this up last night, and you look at, so the Jets have the 26th ranked penalty kill in the league at the end of the regular season. And you look at the number of times they were shorthanded, and I think they were third or fourth in the league. And you look at the teams ahead of them that were had more time shorthanded. They're all playoff teams, Calgary, Anaheim, Washington, and then a couple teams, St. Louis and Boston, were just below them. You know, so it's interesting. So all those teams made the playoffs, and the Jets, and they all just have better penalty kills. And, you know, they also have better goaltending and all that sort of thing as well. But, you know, when it comes to special teams, because the Jets also had a below-average power play, like, you know, there was just – they couldn't put it together at the end of the season. Like Jeff said, you know, the power play got a little bit better. Penalty killing, I think, also got a little bit better by the end of the season. But again, you look at a seven-game stretch where nothing matters. So, but, you know, going back to just Maurice and that sort of thing, yeah, I don't – I think he's – I think, yeah, the blame is on him. You know, he has to shoulder quite a bit of it because he is the guy, and his job is to make the team more disciplined. You know, figure out what's going on with the power or the penalty kill and the power play, and, you know, just the same things that Jeff said.
But like you said earlier, Scott, I mean, this is do or die for Paul Maurice especially. I would tend to agree with you, Jeff, that I think Kevin Cheveldayoff's long-term future is probably a little bit more stable than Paul Maurice. And whether or not, you know, Paul Maurice is here for the long term not only has to do with whether this team gets into the playoffs, but it has to do with whether or not we see, you know, improvements in these areas, right? Mm-hmm. So if the Jets get into the playoffs, for example, next year, and then they're out in five games, I mean, is Paul Maurice still going to be the coach? I think they want to see developments in all areas of this team. That's defensively, that's in goal, and all of that, right? And even though this team, you know, with the seven-game winning streak at the end of the season came close to making the playoffs, I mean, again, we've been talking about this for 3 years now, that the Jets special teams have not been good enough, that the penalty kill hasn't been good enough, that the defense needs to be better and all of that. We've seen strides in individual players, but as a whole, when you look at this group, the Jets still gave up too many goals, right? So I think you have to look at it more on a macro level as far as what strides are being taken in this team. Right. And again, the identity of this team, I think we saw, you know, the identity of this team form a little bit kind of towards the end of the season, right? When they started to play for each other a little bit more at the end of the season. And, you know, we know that this team has moved from more of a, moved towards more of a skill team, right? And that happens when you get guys like Patrick Laine and Nikolai Ehlers into the lineup. As far as skill goes, the Jets are right up there with any other team, right? We saw it with the way the Scheifele, Ehlers, Wheeler line finished the season. But again,
isn't that what makes it their struggles so infuriating? Is that you look at their roster, offensively in particular, and say this team, you know, there's a lot of teams that would look at the offensive talent assembled here and would be envious of the
right,
offensive talent.
Right, but there's two sides of the coin, right? Look at the Dallas Stars. They've got Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin and Jason Spezza and all this, but they can't stop a beach ball, right, Drew?
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to have solid goaltending. You've got to have a better defensive play, and those are keys, and those are things that we expect Kevin Cheveldayoff to address in the offseason.
Well, I think – sorry to interrupt, and I think that's the one thing that – Chevy has to do something this offseason, right? Yeah. Like – It's not like you can just stand by, draft a couple guys, and, you know, hope for the best in the next 5 years. I think he actually, this season, more than ever, has to address these issues, goaltending, some depth on the defensive side of the puck.
And we'll talk about that next. We'll talk about the offseason priorities
just,
next segment.
Right, but just, you know, in terms of how his future in this team is, I think he has a big summer ahead of him.
Dave, last word on this one.
And I was going to say, I think Jeff hit it on the head when he brought it up earlier.
What about Scott?
Well, Scott did as well, but the key to my point was Jeff's point.
You're not
going
to give Scott any love, Dave?
No, but the key to my point was Jeff's point, which is that I don't think either of these guys want to be – not that Kevin Cheveldayoff talks to the media with the same time – the same number of times in a week that Paul Maurice does, but the fact is these guys don't want to be talking about contracts throughout the 2017-18 season. So, look, when he was first given his contract for 4 years, Kevin Cheveldayoff then got extended in 2013 for another – 2 years after that one. So we're likely to see a couple-year extension, because what people have to realize is just because you have a contract doesn't mean you can't get fired. So guys can get let go. You can be given a contract and you can be let go. The fact is they're going to give these guys contract extensions, my guess is, because they don't want to have to be answering the questions all next season. And the fact is if they're not performing the way that ownership wants them to be performing, then there'll be changes. But the fact, I don't think there's any question this summer we see both guys get contracts.
When we come back, we discuss what should be the Winnipeg Jets' number one off-season priority. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's our end-of-season Winnipeg Jets Roundtable on TSN 1290.
You're on the Curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
I think if we can get some saves too, I think this year that was kind of a bit of a struggle for us. So there's no team making the playoffs that isn't getting saved, so we're going to definitely need some saves too.
Matthew Perreault with some pointed comments about the Jets' goaltending and the Jets' need for more saves. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's our Winnipeg Jets end of season roundtable with Scott Billick of NHL.com and Jeff Hamilton of the Winnipeg Free Press. We're going to talk about the Jets' number one off-season priority. That's the topic of this segment. First, before we talk about the number one priority, your thoughts on Perreault's comments there, Jeff? Did you think that they were this guy who certainly he went after Jacob Trouba earlier in the year when Trouba was in the midst of his holdout? Do you think that Perreault's comments were maybe a little too honest, or are there going to be sort of ramifications from his comments?
You know what? I think Matthew Perreault, I think a lot of the things he says gets misconstrued. I mean, clearly he's a great quote. He's honest. He's, you know, a passionate guy. I don't think he was saying – it's funny because, you know, you answer a question and then that little snippet of your answer gets blasted all over the radio papers and all the other stuff. But, I mean, I think he's just saying as a collection we all need to get better. I mean, certainly the we need more saves is a direct comment towards the goaltending. I don't think he thinks that we need those guys to be replaced. I think he knows that – you know, with all the youth, including the young guys that are continuing to develop, the goalies are part of that. He's also mentioned in that part that they need to push games further. They need to do a better job defensively to get games into overtime. He's one of those main guys who talks about that. Yeah, the Jets have 40 wins, but they only have seven points out of those losses in OT and stuff. And another one, Mark Scheifele, I think is another one that was misconstrued. He was asked a question about the coaching. And whether the team had, head coach Paul Maurice had the room, but it was opened by TSN Sarah Oleski about him being on the hot seat, and you could tell from his body language right away that he was focused on that one part. And Mark's, he's a good player, a good person, but you know he doesn't really listen to the questions at the best of times. So I think he focused on that one main part at the beginning, and when he answered and didn't address whether or not head coach Paul Maurice had the room, he was focused more on it's out of our control, the whole hot seat issue. That's a media thing. So anyway, I just thought I'd throw that in there. A lot of these times you get snippets and it can mean maybe less than what it actually is being said.
Okay, then back to the offseason priority for the Winnipeg Jets. Most people would address sort of three issues. One, the need for improved goaltending. Two, the need for a left-side defenseman. And three, the need for sort of a defensive forward who can really shore up your special teams, in particular your penalty kill. Of the three, do you have one that you would rank as your top priority? And how do you think the Jets are going to go out and address that issue if they are?
Yeah, absolutely. Goaltending has to be number one. And it's not that Connor Hellebuyck isn't the future of this team. I think he still is and will still get the opportunity. But you need to bring in, clearly, if anything was recognized through this season, it was that they were kind of a good, you know, a strong goaltending away from being in the playoffs, perhaps. And so I think that's the number one issue. I think there will be concerns with that in the sense that, you know, getting any goalie, I mean, you can throw out the list of names, whether it's from Scott Darlings to the Ben Bishops to the Brian Elliotts to, you know, anyone else who might be a pending UFA. It's going to be expensive to get a goalie. So, I mean, but I think the most fascinating part with that is, are you looking for a Ben Bishop who will probably want 5-6 years of a contract? Or are you looking to find a guy who maybe you can slightly overpay a little bit, but is only going to be around for 2 years, 2 or 3 years? You know, is there that goalie in that market that's looking for? But what I find very interesting about this offseason in general, I think this is going to be one of the most exciting off seasons that we've seen in the 6 years, because you look at this team and there's not going to be, you know, Paul Maurice mentioned there might be one or two guys that make this lineup, but those one or two new guys will not necessarily add on to the 8 new guys that have been here for the last 2 years. I think there's a real competition now for who's going to get those jobs. And I believe, at least I have this hunch, that they're going to bring in some veteran presence. I think they feel that they're there. So I think those guys like the Andrew Copps, the Kyle Connors, Roslovics, Danos, Armias are all going to compete for those positions. And I think you're going to see a number of them end up playing for the Moose next season. And to fill those holes will probably be guys through free agency. Because we got a big panel here, goaltending has to be number one issue and needs to be addressed. And you need to bring in that veteran presence.
Scott?
Yeah, I mean, goaltending, it's hard to disagree with that. It was being the top thing. I mean, the Jets, when it mattered, their save percentage as a team was under 900. You know, I think it climbed up at the end of the year there. So, I mean, that's not a playoff. That's not how you make the playoffs with bad going. Now, you know, who they go after, that's an interesting question. You know, do they want somebody who has a veteran presence that could? And I asked this to Paul Maurice, and he kind of, you know, he didn't really answer it in the way that, you know, I would have liked, but that's fine. But, you know, it's just, you know, would a veteran presence this year, even Andre Pavlik backing up or in the room, you know, helping out Connor through his first year this year, would it made a difference? And, you know, I'm under the assumption that it would have, you know, through some of the tough times. And they kind of let Connor, you know, go through the ups and downs of the season by himself, you know, in terms of, you know, having that guy behind him or around him to kind of work through it. So, you know, that goes into, do they bring in Scott Darling, who doesn't have that same experience, or do they go after a guy like Marc-Andre Fleury or, you know, Ben Bishop or somebody like that who has more experience, playoff experience, you know, has been a good goalie in this league and has probably experienced the ups and downs of that. So, you know, goaltending, though, you know, no matter how you look at it, if they had a 920 goaltender or 925 goaltender, it would mask some of their defensive issues. So,
Ezzy, the Jets have been reticent as an organization to really make trades very often, aside from when sort of their hand was forced. Is this the off season where you expect Kevin Cheveldayoff to take one of his younger assets and maybe turn it into a bona fide NHL player that fills one of their gaps, or takes that first round draft pick, or takes a package of draft picks to try and address one of the holes, be it the goaltending hole, be it the left side defense hole, be it a sort of a shutdown forward hole?
Yeah, and we talked about this a few weeks back, Drew. I think it's more likely that if the Jets bring in a goaltender, it's going to be via free agency as opposed to acquiring a defenseman via trade, right? So, you know, Scott mentions Marc-Andre Fleury, a guy who's got 2 years left on his contract. He's got a no-move clause, but we know that the Penguins can't protect both Marc-Andre Fleury and Matt Murray in the expansion draft. So for me, Marc-Andre Fleury would be number one as far as goaltenders for the Jets to acquire, and you're going to have to make a significant decision about a prospect, most likely, because unless you can get him straight up for a draft pick. But when you're talking about some of the other goaltenders, you know, Jeff brings up a good point. Do you want to bring in a goaltender and sign him to 4 or 5 years? And I don't think you do, because you have Eric Comrie waiting in the wings there. We saw Eric Comrie already play a game for the Jets, and he finishes off the season with the Moose with a shutout. So you know you have Eric Comrie in the system. I don't know necessarily you want to bring a goaltender and sign him to a 5-year contract, because then Eric Comrie kind of gets stuck in the AHL unless you make a decision to, you know, trade Connor Hellebuyck, right? So I think if you are going to acquire a goaltender, it's probably going to be on a 2 or 3 year contract at most. But we'll see what happens. But it's really got to be the goaltender issue that's addressed, right? And it has to be a veteran goaltender. It can't be a 23 or 24 year old goaltender. It has to be a goaltender that has a lot of NHL experience and that can play top minutes. And so it's not just a goaltender that can push Connor Hellebuyck. It's a guy that could potentially be the top goaltender, right? Not a 1B. You probably want to go out and get a guy who can be a 1A, right? So as far as, you know, acquiring a defenseman, we've talked about it for a long time. I really do believe they need that shutdown defenseman. I think Josh Morrissey is someone who has turned into a shutdown defenseman for them. So if you want to go out and acquire someone, you're going to have to make the trade. I've used Mark Stahl as an example many times, and we went over other left D targets for the Winnipeg Jets. So a guy like a Mark Stahl, I think, on your second pair really helps out, because I think at this point in his career, Toby Enstrom, and again, Twitter's going to go nuts, and this is just my own personal opinion, I don't think Toby Enstrom is more than the third pairing defenseman now.
Dave, how do you see the Jets addressing these issues in the offseason?
Well, I'd love to be unique in my perspective here, but it's going to sound a little redundant, because the problem is that, right, the first thing you're going to have to do is address the goaltending. I don't think there's any question, because you had 4 wins for Michael Hutchinson in the first 70 games of the season for the Jets. Then he gets 5 in the next block of 10. So, I mean, that's just not, that's
don't
not good.
Don't get blinded by those 5 in the last 10
when it
doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's all well and good that he had 5 wins in the last Jets block of 10. Mm-hmm. But the fact is, in the first 70 games for Winnipeg, when he played, he only had 4 wins. Now, I think he played a total of probably about 18 games. But the fact is that 5 or 6 games makes a pretty big difference if you have a goalie in there who's getting you those wins. So, I think number one priority for Kevin Cheveldayoff and his staff is to address their goaltending situation. I'm with Ez. I believe it'll be through free agency. I think that's the way you do that. And then when you talk about your left side defenseman, which I would suggest is their next priority, that's most likely a trade. And again, there's so many factors that it's easy to throw out, do a trade or pick up this guy. But the fact is right now, all eyes have to be on the expansion draft, because until that kind of takes place, everything's somewhat in limbo. And then you have to figure out, what are the Jets going to do with Jacob Trouba? Are they going to keep him under the current contract? Are they going to try and extend him? Which obviously most people around here hope they do for a very long time. And, like I said, those are your top 2 priorities from my perspective for this team moving forward.
Let me ask you guys about Trouba quickly. Do you think Jacob Trouba, I mean, he's said the right things publicly since the holdout. Do you think he really does have an interest in signing a long-term contract here in Winnipeg?
Yeah, I don't know. We kind of went through a little bit of a Evander Kane situation during that breakout or during the exit interviews and the final meeting with the media. He was kind of asked a direct question, which I thought was a yes or no, and I end up following up with that question being, do you want to be in Winnipeg? Well, to me, that's a yes or that's that's a no. I mean, clearly you're not going to say no if that's your feelings, but you'd think you'd want to say yes.
No, Evander said no pretty much.
Yeah, yes and no, but he didn't say, he never said one, so it was always this cloud of whatever. I think, with Jacob Trouba, it's a different scenario than Evander Kane. I think he's a different piece in the dressing room and how he interacts with the guys, but I do think that the Jets should try hard to get him there. With what happened last season, you have to have a hard time thinking with how chaotic a year can be that you just kind of 180'd that opinion. Maybe if they made the playoffs and drove in, it might be different. But I don't think it's, I don't think his concerns were always about, I think it's where he thinks he fits, in a system. So if that's changed, then I'm not going to get in Jacob Trouba's head, because, he's kind of didn't really tell the truth before, and he doesn't seem to be, giving up a lot now. So we'll see. But I think the Jets should be trying to do that for sure.
Scott, quickly to you on that one.
Yeah. I think if you look at what Jacob Trouba asked for when the holdout last June, when he started it, when he said he didn't want to be here, he got everything that he wanted. So now it's going to be, is he going to get, is he going to get now the money that he wants? And, I think Jacob Trouba proved this year that he's probably worth what he asked for. But, it's going to be very interesting, because it's a black mark. I think if they can't sign him on the club, that's how I feel about it. Because you have a guy who is going to be your top pairing guy for the next years, right? And and a guy who is going to be a driver on this team. It's a word that's been kind of thrown around by a few people now, but I don't think
I don't think the Jets can afford to lose Jacob Trouba, because if you look at their defensive depth, where does it go after that? Who's coming up that's going to do what Jacob Trouba can do? I think, you know, they have no choice. They have to find a way to sign him.
And Scott, if Jacob Trouba isn't part of the long-term plans, then we're not talking about acquiring a left side defense, but we're talking about, are they going to go out and acquire a right shot defenseman, right?
It changes
Sure, yeah. I don't understand how you replace a guy like that, especially with, you know, he put up career highs this year. You know, he seems to just be getting better and better. Depending what time Dustin Byfuglien starts to fade on defense, you know, they need Jacob Trouba to step in, and he has. And I think if they can't sign him, it's not good for the club.
When we come back, we look at the Jets' approach to the expansion draft. One final segment of our end-of-season Winnipeg Jets Roundtable. You're listening to TSN 1290.
Legal Curve Hockey Show returns. Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Like I said, season just finished, and we haven't had any conversation about the future or anything. I've been in this franchise for 10 years, and I'm happy here, and I'm excited to see where this team is going. So like I said earlier, this is a team that I believe should be in the playoff. And I'm proud every night I get to put this jersey on.
Winnipeg Jets defenseman Toby Enstrom, when asked if he had considered or if he's been asked to waive his no-move clause as part of the upcoming decisions surrounding the NHL expansion draft.
By the way, is that the first time we've heard Toby Enstrom in 2 years?
I think he speaks about once a year at the end of during the garbage bag day.
He usually speaks at the beginning, too. Usually get him at least once a year.
Yeah.
Like once a year during the season, and
there's
then
a beginning, things. Middle, and end.
Yeah,
he speaks three times a year, though. That's almost unprecedented, I think, to hear a guy that little in the course of a season. In any event, we'll talk about that, as a different day and time if we want. The expansion draft is sort of the next big milestone on the horizon for the Winnipeg Jets, and as things currently stand, with Enstrom having a no move clause and Dustin Byfuglien having a no move clause, and Tyler Myers seemingly on the road to recovery, on the road to health, and Jacob Trouba, of course, turning into a number one right side defenseman, it seems pretty clear that right now the Jets are going to have to go with the 8 skaters, 1 goaltender form of the expansion draft, meaning they'll protect those 4D and then they'll protect the obvious 4 forwards, Wheeler, Scheifele, Little, likely Adam Lowry. How should the Jets approach the expansion draft? If you're Kevin Cheveldayoff, are you sitting down with Toby Enstrom and his representatives to try and get him to waive that no-move clause, to try and get the Jets to be able to go 7 forwards, 3 defensemen, and a goaltender? And if the Jets were to lose Toby Enstrom, if they're to lose Toby Enstrom in the expansion draft, now they have to fill 2 left-side defensive holes. Is that something they can do this offseason?
Yeah, it's still probably best-case scenario when you look at, if the Jets are going 7-3-1, and they can get Toby Enstrom to waive his no-movement clause, I think that's probably best-case scenario. And I imagine that, they will have talks about that. Toby Enstrom, at the end of the day, is under no obligation to do that. He signed the contract. That's the clause that he signed, and that's what it was agreed on. But I think for the Jets to keep Adam Lowry, to keep Andrew Copp, to keep Joel Armia, to keep Matthew Perreault, and then to make sure that they at least keep Jacob Trouba, and then potentially Myers if they can get Toby to waive, there's a lot of juggling here, but I don't think the Jets are going to lose if they lose Enstrom. Well, he only has 1 year left on his deal after this year,
yeah.
So it's a loss, and it will be a hit on their if he's a third pairing guy, next year, or even if he's on the second pairing. It's a hit from there, but in the long run, they don't lose a guy like Adam Lowry, who is turning into a third line center for this team, a big guy. He ate up a lot of power play minutes, And Matthew Perreault, you can say what you want about the beginning of the season. He finished quite well.
So I don't think they can afford to lose him on forward either. 7-3-1 is the way that I think it'll go. I guess we'll find out, you know, coming up here. But
Jeff, how do you see the Jets' expansion scenario shaping out? And if they're not able to convince Toby Enstrom to waive his no-move clause, if they do have to go with the 8 skaters and protect 4 forwards and 4 D and the goaltender, would you go as far as to say that's damaging to the team?
You know, it kind of reminds me of the beginning of the season when all the talk was about the goaltending and how, you know, who was going to be in net and 3 great options and when what, you know, when arguably they didn't have one single number one. In this way, it's like only one guy is going to get plucked. You know, on a team that didn't make the playoffs, on a team that's still pretty young, on a team where a lot of young guys are going to fight for jobs. I think it is, I'm sure Jets GM Kevin Sheldoff has asked or will ask Toby Enstrom to waive his no movement clause. I don't know how you do that in the sense of, you know, manager player relationship. If it's just, you know, what kind of incentives you can give, if any, it would certainly make things a lot easier for Winnipeg to have Enstrom waive his clause. But in the event that he doesn't want to, and it's fully his right to say he doesn't want to. And if he doesn't, well, I mean, that's his right again. You know, like you can't really blame a player when you sign a contract you don't want to move. Especially to an expansion team. But at the same time, it does put them in a pickle if they don't. And in the sense of the 4-4-1, I think if you're the Jets GM, you're trying to work around a different play. You're trying to, you know, give a draft pick. If you're concerned, because the most fascinating part about this draft is it's not just looking at your roster, but looking at all other 29 rosters and wondering where they're going to play it out and where you think you can play. So it's very strategic, and you know, the team, you know, has done tons of mock drafts and will continue to do mock drafts and try to figure that out. But I think if you go the 4-4-1 route, you're kind of asking to protect, you know, giving a pick over, you know, maybe trying to do the 7-3-1, getting the pick over and asking them not to, you know, incentive not to take a Tyler Myers if he gets exposed.
Yeah, so and it goes back to what we said before, right? I don't think anybody's going to disagree. If Toby Enstrom doesn't waive his no-move clause, how do they go with 4-4-1, right? Because especially if you don't know the future of Jacob Trouba, right? You're not going to expose Jacob Trouba under any scenario. You're not going to expose Tyler Myers, in my opinion, because you don't know the future of Jacob Trouba, right? Or we're going under the assumption that, you know, we don't know if Jacob Trouba is going to be signed to a contract extension after his bridge deal expires, right? So I don't think Kevin Cheveldayoff wants to lose a Joel Armia under option 2 either, right? Because Joel Armia has kind of emerged as that third line defensive forward, has some offensive upside, right? So, you know, a lot of hard decisions to make for Kevin Cheveldayoff, and there are going to be hard decisions to make for every other NHL general manager, right? Because you can't protect everyone. They've made this to kind of give Vegas as much of an advantage they could, right? So, again, it remains to be seen. I think they're going to end up going with option 1, actually.
The 7-3-1 option?
Yeah, and I don't know if that's necessarily their number one priority, but I think, again, that kind of goes under the assumption that Toby Enstrom isn't going to waive his no-move clause.
Which is, of course, the big unknown, Dave.
I think it's going to. I mean, it's hard. It's too hard to predict because there's so many factors. I mean, like everybody's already said, the fact is the Jets want to protect that core group that they have. They would love to have Tobias Enstrom waive his no movement clause so that he could potentially be exposed, not necessarily selected by Las Vegas, but at least exposed. I mean, obviously, he would have the opportunity to have that clause reinserted if he doesn't get picked up by the Las Vegas Knights. So that's obviously the incentive for him if he does do it for the team. But I definitely think that the it's going to make it exciting. Let's put it that way. It's going to make for an exciting June. While Jets fans don't have a lot to look forward to until the draft, they will have something to look forward to while they try and figure out who this team is going to leave exposed.
And Dave, I guess there's always the option that the Jets ask Toby Enstrom to waive his no-move clause and trade him to another team.
Well, that's, I think, would be the fear of Enstrom. Once you waive your no-move clause, I don't think you can put it back into effect. I think once it's...
Oh, no, you're talking about for the draft specifically?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, you're allowed to for the draft. You're basically removing yourself from the no-movement clause of your contract, and then you're saying, essentially, it's like a small
window.
And then you're going to have it reinserted, basically, after the draft has taken place.
Well, there you go. Many things up in the air with regards to the Winnipeg Jets. Big thank you to both Scott Billick and Jeff Hamilton, Scott with NHL.com, Jeff with the Winnipeg Free Press, for joining us on our end-of-season roundtable. Gentlemen, terrific work all season long.
Shout out to Jacob Stoller, by the way, too.
Jacob Stoller in studio observing us, the future of this fine business. Producer Rory doing a great job behind the board. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com. That's where you can find a podcast version of this program in case there's anything you want to hear again, in case you missed any of it. Download the podcast on iTunes, get it sent to your iPod each and every week. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, for my colleague, Dave Minuk, for Ezra Ginsberg. We thank you for listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
As long as we set the yard, the team will be all right.